So thank you very much, the organizers, for the invitation. Thank you very much, Mr. Dugin. Thank you very much, all the participants of the this very important conference. I want to say some words on the specific, I think, theoretical problems, the commonality between Eurasianism and Pan-Africanism, the theoretical commonality. Because Eurasian integration today is one of Russia's key geopolitical priorities, and African integration is the key geopolitical priority for the countries of Africa for for many years. But both concepts were formed within their respective ideological currents. And these currents have some very serious structural similarities that go beyond the boundaries pure geopolitical concepts. They are philosophical, first of all, geosophical. So we can organize these similarities according to Arnold Toynbee challenge response scheme. And this is maybe very interesting and useful for us. First of all, the both ideological currents, Eurasianism and Pan-Africanism, where the responses of the specific civilizations to the challenge of the best. Because both Eurasianist and Pan-Africanist were the intellectuals who knew the West, who lived there first Pan-Africanist and Eurasianist, but they made a different choice in favor of the non-West, the civilizational sovereignty of the regions. For example, we can say about Russian intellectuals, including aristocrats like Nikolai Sergeyevich Trubetskoy, the founder of Eurasian movement, who after the Russian Revolution found them outside of the Russia in the West, who were some kind of liberals before the revolution, but after the revolution and in the West, they became the Russian traditionalists. They became the radical continuators of the Slavophile traditions and opposed. And they opposed to the West not only the Slavic world, but the Eurasia as a whole. The same was the same trajectory was specific for Pan-Africanists, who first Pan-Africanists were African and African-American intellectuals who studied and grew up also in the West because of the Western colonialism and Western colonial rule in Africa and the history of slavehood in New World, Caribbean and North and South America. But the first Pan-Africanists also, as well as Eurasianists, included members of local aristocracy. For example, I can say about Tuvalu Oenu, who was the member of the aristocracy of Dahomey Kingdom and lived in France, and in 1924 founded the General League for Defense of the Black Race, one of the first Pan-African organizations. So we can found the direct bloodline to the old pre-colonial state tradition also. The general anti-colonialist discourse of Eurasianist and general anti-colonial discourse of the Pan-Africanist in the same period, for example, in the beginning of the 20th century, these discourses corresponded, and we can found the same ideas of unification and rejections, rejection of the West in Eurasianism and in Pan-Africanism, especially in the such authors of as Sheikh Anta Diop, Leopold Senghor, and others. The other challenge was modernity, and we can found that first Russian Eurasianist were the first Russian who paid attention to the books of the founder of the traditionalist movement of traditionalist philosophy, René Guénon. They also advocated a return of Russia to the roots of its old Orthodox traditions. The same was specific to Pan-Africanist and in modern Pan-Africanism and modern Eurasianism. For example, in Pan-Africanism of Kinesiba and modern neo-Eurasianism of Mr. Alexander Dugin, we can find the same traditionalism, the same rejection of modernity. But we can talk also about the ideas, for example, of African Renaissance formulated by the Thabo Mbeki, who has also a critical attitude towards modernity. The challenge of modernity was answered by the Eurasianism and Pan-Africanism by the idea of tradition, by the return to the tradition, by the return to the roots. And also we can say about the third challenge, who was not from outside, but from the inside. It's the challenge of empire. We know that the highest form of political organization in the world of tradition was empire. Kingdom of kingdoms, and Africa, for example, witnessed many such imperial formations. For example, empires of Mali, Benin, Monopotapa, Zimbabwe, ancient Zimbabwe, and all these empires were a source of pride for Africans and have inspired Pan-Africanism. So imperial consciousness was also opposed to Western modern imperialism, was played a role as something that stimulated the political imagination, was a critical resource for sovereign ideology that mobilized opposition to colonialism. Also, the real African empire, Ethiopia, also inspired early Pan-Africanism, was an example of resistance to colonizers. However, the Pan-Africanists did not they not favored the restore of ancient empires. They found as they sought a new way to build a new union that would include the entire African greater space on the basis of rather than on the base of subjugation. The same was done by Eurasianists, who also were the people nostalgic to empire, to the former Russian Empire, but they were not in favor of recreating the Russian Empire as a old form, pronounced for the building of new state integration entity on the principle of pan-Eurasian nationalism. So we can find this symmetry between Eurasianism and Pan-Africanism. And these ideologies, they overcame the challenges of the West and challenges of modernity. And they found a new way for the integration. Yes. Just 2 seconds. So, faced with the similar challenges, Russian and Africans, they follow similar path to overcome these challenges. And overcoming create new political forms on the basis of tradition. So these specific theoretical similarities, I think, can can play a major role in the dialogue between Eurasianist and Africans and help each other to understand each other and to understand the common way to overcome the common challenges, I think. Thank you very much.